Welcome to the Veterinary Project Podcast, episode 041.
Welcome to the show created by vets featuring absolutely no pets. This is the Veterinary Project Podcast, hosted by Dr. Michael Bug and Dr. Jonathan Light. Our resident veterinarians have swapped out their stethoscopes in favor of microphones to bring you the Veterinary Project Podcast, a show focused on real conversations, aimed to connect this amazing profession full of remarkable people. Through the sharing of collective stories and wisdom, and connecting over the many unique challenges we face, we invite you to join our community of veterinary professionals leading intentional lives. And now, here are the hosts of the Veterinary Project Podcast, Dr. Michael Bug and Dr. Jonathan Light.
Welcome back to the Veterinary Project Podcast. Yours truly, Dr. Michael Bug, Dr. Jonathan Light. Let's get at it, Mike. We've got a pretty serious topic of conversation today. We do not want to be preachy with this. Super important. We're jumping right into this. No banter this morning. We want to provide value for our listeners. Mike, what are we talking about today?
Talking about making mistakes and how you deal with them after the fact, because they're going to happen in veterinary medicine. You know, you practice long enough and stuff's going to go south.
I remember my first year of practice, and I think it took me about 6 months before I made a major mistake. And holy heck, I don't think school prepared me for that. Probably more the emotional and the psychological side. And then the contribution in terms of the owners within the practice towards the discussion with the owners. I think that was a big deal, which I wasn't prepped for.
Yeah. And I mean, in all fairness to universities and to schooling, I don't think you can be fully prepared, because like thinking of my first major mistake, there is nothing that can prepare you for how you're going to feel when you're the veterinarian, right? Like I remember being a student or being a third year student and being in clinics, and mistakes would happen, but they weren't my mistakes, right? They were someone else's, another veterinarian. And I just got to observe them. It is completely different when you're the one that made the mistake and you're the veterinarian in charge, or at least it was to me, right? And yeah, it's one of those things you can't read about it in a textbook where you will feel this way.
So this morning, I think in our pre-setup for this conversation, we just want to share our experiences, what's worked well, what hasn't, and hopefully be able to provide a little bit of guidance without, again, coming across as preachy as to what you should or shouldn't do. This is just our experiences. And I can tell you there's much different feeling 11 years into practice compared to month one of practice.
Yeah. Well, yeah, let's dive in. And like you said, we're just sharing our experience. I'll maybe share kind of one of mine. I'm grabbing like probably my biggest mistake I've made. Obviously, there's all sorts of little mini micro errors that happen throughout the day. Like, you know, missing placing a catheter or not taping it in properly. That's not a mistake, right? That's whatever, like redo it, move on. We're talking about major ones. So the one that jumps out for me was a dog neuter. It was an 18-month-old German Shepherd. And it was within my first year of practice, but I honestly don't remember, like, was it 1 month, 3 months, 6 months? But I had done a lot of elective surgery in my third year leading up to it. I was very comfortable with, you know, dog neuters, cat spays, cat neuters, small dog spays, etc. So anyway, this dog neuter, very routine, did the surgery in the morning, had no worries. Everything went by the book. Then that afternoon, one of the techs comes flying around the corner into the treatment room and is like, "Mike, get over here." And you can just tell by the tone and the voice of the tech. I was like, "This is going to be bad." And I get around into the dog runs, and that dog neuter had died. You know, and I'll never forget that feeling when you see a pet laying there and you grab your stethoscope and you're just like praying you're going to find a heartbeat, but you kind of already know. But anyway, moving on to the mistake portion of it, I had fantastic mentorship at that veterinary clinic, and they walked me through it. Their framework was pretty simple. It was basically apologize, make it right, and then go one step further. So that was kind of their rough framework. Obviously, it depends mistake by mistake. But I mean, with that, what we did is, you know, we got the owners. I think this was even very few people had cell phones at the time. So the owner was on the way to the vet clinic to pick up their dog from the surgery. So obviously they're not expecting this. So when they get there, we all get in a room and, you know, step one is just apologize, be very honest. Like at this point, we don't know what happened, right? It could have been an anesthetic complication. It could have been surgical error. So we offered right away. And when I say we, I mean the clinic. So again, fantastic clinic that just sort of took charge of this. We offered a postmortem on the pet, took it up to Saskatoon, to the vet college, to the university, to have a full, postmortem done on it. Cause of death turned out to be surgical error, like a ligature had slipped off one of the spermatic cords. And so with that knowledge, we went back to the owner, reported what we found. And then what the clinic did was to sort of make it right and go one step further. Now, obviously you can't bring that pet back. But what they did is they got this owner, they got them a new dog. This German Shepherd happened to be pretty highly trained. So it wasn't a free dog from the pound. Like they had to pay some money for it and then covered its full first year of life, right? So all the shots, and then it's neuter when it came around to neuter. The only caveat was I wasn't allowed to be the one to neuter it. So I was like, oh yeah, that's probably fair. Yeah. So anyway, that's my quick experience. I'll throw it over to you, Jonathan, because I know you have experience both personally as a vet making mistakes, but then also as a leader managing mistakes. So I'm excited to hear what you got to say.
Yeah, I appreciate you sharing that one, Mike. And I have just one follow-up question before I go into my own and things I've seen is psychologically, Mike, how did you deal with both the consequences of making a medical mistake and how do you think it affected you going forward from that position?
Man, that was a good question. This is a great question. So short-term, devastating. Like I can still remember it. And this would have been 2008, I think, maybe 2009, very early in my career. You know, that feeling like your gut's just twisting. There's a lump in your throat. You want to just go crawl in the corner so no one can see you. That's how I felt. But honestly, in hindsight, when I look back at it, it made me just way better at surgery. You know, I wouldn't go so far as saying I was arrogant because I was just starting out, but I was pretty confident at surgery. You know, like I was like, nothing's going to go wrong. I know what I'm doing. And that just totally changed the perspective where like every single surgery, you need to know what you're doing, recheck everything. Cause at any point something can go wrong. And I can honestly say I never did another dog neuter ever in my career without thinking of that one. I changed my surgical technique. Like I changed the ligatures I used. I changed my suture patterns. I changed the suture. Like I revisited everything. So in hindsight, I mean, this is maybe horrible to say, but if I got to rewind time, I would do it again because it made me a way better surgeon overall.
So amazing you say that because I had the similar experience with the two. I have one where, again, first year within the first 6 months, an animal came in, and I provided it meloxicam. So just a standard NSAID going home. But again, I don't know what I was thinking at that time, but that dog was showing blood within its GI system when it had presented. And so the complete lack of understanding that the major contraindication for using an NSAID is when you have bleeding present. And I laugh now at that 11 years later, but again, within the hours, this animal had serious consequences. It didn't die. It came back to the hospital and we had to watch and monitor it over the next 48 hours. And I don't remember the name of that dog, but I sure remember speaking with the owner because it was my responsibility to go back to that owner and go, I shouldn't have prescribed that medication. We shouldn't have used it. And very quickly, that dog had an adverse event, which I have no reason to understand was different other than the fact that it was already showing abnormalities of which an NSAID was not a place to be using. And I remember that and going, we're going to do everything we can. And just to the question I asked you previously, psychologically, I was sweating bullets. because I knew there was no other reason that this animal, and maybe there was, but in my brain and in my mind, and based on the medication that I had prescribed and had been used in that dog, that this dog should be having the effects that it had. It made its way through. I remember that owner not being happy whatsoever, but I remember that conversation and I remember going, okay, put your big boy pants on. You need to have this discussion. It's your responsibility. And my mentors in that clinic were like, you need to talk to that owner. And I did. And it went as well as possible. And just the same as you, I can think every time I give out meloxicam now to this day, number one adverse. And it's such a simple one from meloxicam. We still use it quite a bit. And then as an NSAID, no matter which type, but I will not use it. My second example is a dehiscence. So we had an intestinal laparotomy, laparotomy where I had to go into the small intestines and, you know, post-surgery, there was a dehiscence and looking back at it and we ended up having to go back in and flush the abdomen. And this cat was named Pierre, and I'll remember him again for the rest of my life. That dehiscence was me. Again, it is that medical error in surgery can occur, but the way I had placed those sutures was not appropriate. They were too tight for that location. And I'll always remember that. And in this case, that cat did not make it. And so the one side of me can say, hey, that's a regular complication of surgery, but we're taught different. We're trained different. And in my view, that was a medical error that shouldn't have occurred. And due to my error, of where I placed those sutures. So again, similar to what you described, that in that scenario, I've never placed sutures that way again. And even as of last week, when I was placing sutures, I was thinking about that, like literally peer comes into my head in that situation. I remember those owners. I remember sitting in that room. I remember having that discussion and it went well. But again, it was coming from a place of honesty. It was coming from a place of compassion and empathy and a real wanton desire to make things right. I don't truthfully recall what we did in terms of payment. I know it was a no-cost surgery, without a doubt. But I bring that up in the context of now experience in a leadership role, because those are the two majors that I've been a part of. But I've been a part of many others in a leadership management role, both ones that have gone well and haven't gone well from the point of discussions and communication with the owner. And in those cases, in every single case where there is a possible perceived medical error on our part, whether it's a veterinarian, technologist, other individual within the veterinary team, first investigating what's happened. So before jumping to conclusion one way or another, let's calm our emotions down. Let's look at it as objectively as possible, knowing sometimes that's very, very hard because really bad things do happen. Identifying where error may have occurred, and then being as proactive to provide that information to the owner as to what has happened, and not in the fact of justifying it or trying to make it go away just like that, but to empathize to the situation and understanding what that might look like from the owner's perspective. From there, when you get to do that, you then give the owner the ability to start processing, especially in the case where an animal has passed. And then we can do follow-up discussions. And oftentimes, and we had one recently here within the group, those cases, being as objective as possible, providing information to the owners, but then also understanding that those owners may take a different viewpoint, and that's not for us to judge. That's not for us to decide. It's for us to be able to provide those information, empathize, and like you said, try and make right where possible and or provide that solution and or set up for that process or protocol, which may not have been in place, so that you can provide that opportunity of learning to that next owner. And I'm going on a rant here, but this is such an important topic. I've been taken to the ABVMA, which is our regulatory body, for a case of which I never even touched. So I was a general manager at that time. And it was the best thing that also could have happened, because it was a year plus long ordeal, of which again ended up being not pursued in terms of we had done nothing wrong, but it was a great opportunity to learn what the regulatory steps are. And I'm very happy from a veterinary profession that we have those in place, because again, we need to walk the steps. And when something bad has happened, we walk through those steps appropriately. Sometimes, hey, we are going to get a slap on the wrist. Sometimes there's more serious consequences, but that's the life and the profession we live in. And in my view, it's handled very well. And we could go into that further at a later time.
Yeah. I mean, overall, it's kind of one of those things that it comes with the territory. You know, if we want to be responsible for saving pets' lives, we have the other side of the sword where things can go south, and unfortunately we can cause harm inadvertently. But it is, I mean, it's funny, the more vets you talk to about this, obviously no one wants it to happen. But once they get through kind of their first major medical error, it's almost always a similar story of how much better it made them as a veterinarian. So, you know,
hope so. There is a
silver lining. I mean, that's part of, I mean, vets wouldn't be in the profession if they didn't care, you know, and you really see that come out in those situations. So, you know,
most definitely. I bring up the point of a former guest, Craig Mosley, Dr. Mosley. He's a strong advocate for us reporting medical errors. By the reporting of medical errors, and we have a better chance of actually being able to make improvements within veterinary medicine. And we haven't seen that move yet, I feel, in veterinary medicine the way that you have in human medicine. I'm interested to see what happens in the next 10-20 years with that, because by the reporting of it, then potentially we save many further animals and potentially save careers, because there are people, I know this for a fact, that don't psychologically return from a really, really bad event.
Yeah. It's interesting. That's the scientific method, is you got to learn from your mistakes and figure out what's working and try to keep moving forward.
Yeah. So any small tidbits, I think you provided great ones, Mike, in terms of, again, we're not here to preach. We're not here to provide, you know, the answer, because there is no clear answer. Any specific pieces in your experience that have helped in that movement that you would provide to a new grad coming out that might be listening to this?
Oh man, that's a tough one. I would say, you know, you can't, don't live in fear. Like, it's good to be like alert and on it and, you know, always trying to do your best, but you can't live in fear of this happening, because I mean, it's just a matter of time. If you do enough surgeries, at some point something is going to happen. And so when I say, when you're in those moments and you're going through it, the clear open communication, you know, try to put your ego to the side. No one wants to be the cause of a medical error, obviously. And it's really hard in that moment. I remember scrambling and being like, I just hope this isn't my fault. And it's like, you know, unfortunately at this point, it's not about you. You do what's right, do what's right by the pet, the owner, and you'll come out ahead with that, you know, just trying to, you know, keep that ego kind of in check and move through it.
Those are great points, especially on the point of, yeah, that's fantastic points. So reach, I always say your next level within the clinic, whether it is the clinic manager, the owner, corporate, there are a lot of employee assistance programs. There is a lot out there now. Ensure that you reach out to that next level. It has to be a part of this equation. It has to be 100% of the time. You must use the leaders within your clinic. Do not take it on yourself. Again, if I could preach about one thing, that is the one thing, and I'm not supposed to be preaching today.
And sorry, I know we're going long. I'll jump in with, that was another thing at my clinic where this happened. The leaders were fantastic, but also all of the coworkers, all the other veterinarians. You know, when I said I wanted to bury my head in the sand and go roll into a hole, you know, everyone supported me in that situation. Everyone's been through this, right? If they've been around for a while, they know what you're going through. So that support piece is massive.
Excellent. Well, this is a short one for you today. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope you got some value out of it. Enjoy your day. Thanks, Mike, as always.
Thank you for listening to the Veterinary Project Podcast. As a recap, on behalf of our hosts, the Veterinary Project Podcast will be releasing new episodes weekly. So be sure to tune in as we bring you more conversations aimed at helping you enjoy a life well lived. If you enjoyed what you heard on the show and you want to stay in the know, please like, love, and or subscribe to the podcast on the listening platform of your choosing, as we're available on all the usual suspects. If you know of others that may benefit from these conversations, we'd love it if you please share the show with them, as this will help us grow our community to reach more and more veterinary professionals. Speaking of which, if you are a veterinary professional and would like to get connected with more like-minded individuals who are joining us on this journey, please send an email to theveterinaryprojectpodcast@gmail.com, and we'll invite you to be a part of our private Facebook group. General feedback, requests for information, or perhaps requests to be a guest on the show can also be sent to theveterinaryprojectpodcast@gmail.com. Dr. Michael Bug and Dr. Jonathan Light, thank you for listening to the show, and we'll catch you again next week for another episode of the Veterinary Project Podcast. Bye for now.